court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dude's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Well, Mike, we made the national news last week.
We made the national news?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not us exactly, but one of our topics that we talked to our listeners about a couple months ago, they brought it up on the national news. It's a whole new concept.
It might be a little bit different than us making the national news, but maybe...
Well, I felt that way. They were talking about this thing that happens, and they send people these items they didn't order, and they don't know why they're coming, and they're addressed to them, and they've never been billed for them, never paid for them. These items could come, and I'm sitting there going, "It's brushing, it's brushing, it's a brushing, it's a fraud, it's brushing." And then they said, "And this thing is called brushing." And I was like, "Yes, that was what we said. We've already told everybody about that. At least everybody listens to us."
And Mary was like, "Tommy, shut up."
Yeah. They're brushing their yak. They're brushing their yak. But, you know, they reach a little larger audience than we do, though.
Maybe ever so slightly.
But it felt good anyway to know. I wouldn't have known what they were talking about ordinarily, yeah. But we covered that. And here it was on the national news, this thing going on. And exactly what we told people is just people that are beefing up their reviews falsely.
That's pretty cool. So we're ahead of the curve a little bit.
We're right out there in front, putting our listeners on the leading edge of scams or whatever, knowledge.
The leading edge of something.
Leading edge of something. We're leading somewhere.
Well, this episode, we are going to talk about red light cameras and speeding cameras and different kinds of cameras that enforce traffic and traffic citations.
Right. We've had a couple of our listeners post some things on our Facebook page. Joseph Atwell was one of them, I believe, that posted one of the things up there.
Yeah, and Jim Hansen posted a story about New Miami, Ohio, where a judge actually ordered this village to pay back money and fines. So we kind of talked about this a little bit before, I think, but not as much in depth as we're going to go into today in one of our previous episodes.
Yeah, I think we touched on it when we were talking about due process. And that, I think you brought that up as one of the problems in due process was traffic cameras.
Yeah, because it illustrates the need for the confrontation clause of the Sixth Amendment pretty well. So we'll get into that a bit more. But this New Miami story that Jim posted about. So basically, New Miami had speed cameras. The town of 2,500 people, the mayor or whoever, signed a contract with this company called Opto Traffic, and it was a Maryland firm. And they actually supplied the cameras and got 40% of the fines generated from the cameras and the fines themselves, basically leaving New Miami with the rest and the rest of the profit. And basically, they started this program in 2012, and they collected over $3 million with these cameras. Optic Traffic, about $2 million in the city. I'm sorry, the New Miami, about $2 million. Optic Traffic, about $1 million. 200,000, according to the decision. So, and these things were basically fines. They weren't like criminal sanctions or criminal traffic tickets. So, and that's one of the things, like I said, we talked about a bit previously, and that's the important distinction I wanted to get into. So, whenever you get a traffic ticket, like written by a police officer, the police officer has a radar gun or sees you run a red light and actually watches you do it and then pulls you over and writes you a ticket and essentially writes a little mini criminal complaint against you saying, "I witnessed this action take place," and you can either pay the fine or whatever, or you can go to court. Now, the reason that this is what I would say preferred and in a criminal matter is because you have a right to have that argued before a judge, and you have the right to confront your accuser under the Sixth Amendment. Now, the Sixth Amendment has a confrontation clause in it, which basically says, "In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to be confronted by the witnesses against him."
Well, and you'll enjoy it.
And you'll enjoy it. And the problem with these cameras is that you actually can't confront a camera to cross-examine it or say, like, "Hey, that wasn't me." Because oftentimes these things snap pictures and you don't find out about it until, you know, a couple weeks later.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you confront that? How do you actually get some sort of criminal infraction for doing this? So that's oftentimes how these things are work. Like in New Miami, they don't actually criminal type things, but they're actually just like civil fines, like parking tickets.
So a parking ticket is a civil fine, whereas normally a speeding ticket is a criminal offense?
Well, yeah, it's kind of, maybe a criminal offense light would be maybe the right way to address it. For your usually like your reckless driving, things are like 15 miles per hour more or over, or multiple infractions or things like that. Those are definitely have jailable offenses that, you know, you might have to go to jail for them. Just a simple speeding ticket usually is not a jailable offense, but it is a criminal offense because it falls into that whole kind of genre of charges. So
breaking the law.
And a lot of these systems were first set up, they actually were trying to write them as regular criminal infractions, but there were a lot of challenges by lawyers and people who were kind of law savvy that wanted to challenge these things. And basically the courts were like, well, that's a pretty good argument. We can't really let you have a criminal infraction against somebody for these different things because it's violating their constitutional rights.
And depending on what they are, too, it's hard to always prove exactly from a picture, because in a lot of these cases, what I understand is they didn't even offer any photographic evidence of the actual offense or anything like that. They may have a photograph of your license plate, but they didn't really have a photographic evidence of your offense that they submitted. It was just this camera that's located at this position that's trained to do this said you did it.
Yeah. And they might not be. I mean, some of these cameras do actually zoom in on the driver and the face, so you can try to identify the person that way. But for the most part, it's essentially almost like a property crime where your property is doing this infraction, and then basically you're responsible for it.
Right. The car is guilty.
Yeah, because it's like, well, if you weren't driving it, somebody you let was driving it did this. So
we're going to fine your car, and if you own the car, you have to pay for it.
Kind of, yeah. That's kind of their theory of it, I guess. So there. And the way these things work, too, is that these camera systems aren't cheap. Basically, these camera systems are essentially, you know, I'm doing air quotes right now, sold to a city, usually by an out-of-state corporation, and they say, hey, we'll put these cameras in for you for free, but we want to get some of the revenue from it. And that, you know, these contracts vary, but that's usually the way it works, is that they get a portion of the fines. So it kind of gives them a bit more of an incentive to be a little trigger-happy with some of these camera fines, because it's more revenue.
So it's a conflict of interest.
It is. I mean, it's one of those things. It's the appearance of impropriety. Like, it seems like it's certainly there.
Well, yeah, it's like one of those other laws you said, the fact that it happens is proof enough that it took place.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that if everybody has incentive to make money off this, the city has incentive to make money off of it, and the traffic company that installs them, they have incentive to make money off of it. Therefore, the rest of us poor Joe Schmoes walking by, we're the ones that are going to be the ones that lose out of this, because they're going to, you know, the better they do, the more they catch, the better they do money-wise.
Now, see, that's different, because if you have a police officer who writes tickets, now the cities make money off that as well, so that they can use that to generate revenue. But if you're falsely accused of that, or they're trying to inflate their numbers, you have an opportunity to go to court and actually confront this police officer who wrote you the ticket and try to see what proof they have and actually kind of defend yourself.
Right.
Whereas with these things, I mean, what do you do? It's like, well, here's a camera. Here's a picture.
Well, I've often wondered, too, you've got two cars driving down the road side by side and they single one out and say you're speeding. How do they know it wasn't the other one? You know, I mean, I don't know how good that stuff is or how well it works or how often they calibrate it, you know, so how do they know which one it is? I always feel like if I'm riding along beside a semi and we're both speeding, the semi is going to be picked up on the radar as a much bigger blip than me.
Yeah. And, you know, that would be my defense too. It's like, well, I wasn't speeding. There was a semi that flew past me. That must've been what the radar was.
Yeah.
How far away were you, officer? How do you know you were singling me out? How long have you used this? When's the last time you calibrated it?
Well, I'm also suspect, too, because a lot of this stuff that we dug up takes place in the state of Ohio. and they've evidently become camera happy in what they want to do. And I know, you know, firsthand, a city right across the river from us, that the mayor has gotten rid of about three or four police chiefs either they've quit because he's put so much pressure on them, or else he's fired them. Main reason being, all the mayor wants him to do is issue fines and citations and things like that bring money in. And he's complained to him about arresting people for crimes, because when they arrest people for crimes, the city has to pay for them to be in jail.
Yeah.
So the city's losing money. So he says, as the mayor, I'm directing you what I want you to do. I don't want you to fine people and bring in revenue, and I don't want you to arrest people and cost us money.
Yeah.
So they've got a real problem. They're using their law enforcement over there to subsidize their state government. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Well, I don't think that's a Buckeye problem necessarily, but that's probably just something we see right across the river.
Well, it could be, but there's several of these things that we've pulled up. That's where it took place.
Yeah, that is true. Some states have actually made having cameras of this kind like completely illegal in this different states. And I have a list of them, but I think before we get to that list of them, we might want to see if there's any pending motions.
Why, yes, Your Honor. Might we approach the bench to pay for court costs?
All right, who do we have on the docket?
First on the docket today are our good buddies at DollarShaveClub.com.
I got to tell you, DollarShaveClub.com has actually changed the way that I shave. Whenever I have to shave, and I used to always kind of hate it because it was like, I don't like to do it. But now I usually put on, after I shower, I'll put a little Dr. Carver shave butter on my hands, rub it together, slap it on my face. And then I use one of the razors and it never pulls. It's perfect.
Well, I agree. And I showered and cleaned up and shaved just right before you came for us to do this recording.
Can't tell.
And you can't tell? What? Feel this face. Feel how smooth this is.
It looks just like a butt.
There you go.
Or something like that. I don't know.
That's the smoothness that you get from these shaves. I love my Dollar Shave Club razor. And with right now, with it being Olympic time and thousands of athletes going for the gold, it got me thinking. With all that Dollar Shave Club has been doing lately, as the clear champions of the bathroom, they deserve a gold medal.
I think they do. It's a world record.
A bathroom cathlete. I don't know what that is. Downhill shaving.
Downhill shaving?
Or something like that. What do you call them? Slaloming on your face.
DollarShaveClub.com will deliver everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best.
Dollar Shave Club is more than just razors. And Dollar Shave Club is better than shopping in a store.
And more than a store, they have everything. They have everything that you need to look, smell, and feel your best. Shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, and of course, the razors that we were talking about.
And they're the best ones we've ever used. I get an amazing high-quality shave every morning from my Dollar Shave Club executive razor. It makes me feel important, too, since it's an executive razor.
And the gold standard of my morning routine is the Dr. Carver Shave Butter. It helps the razor glide gently over your skin. It is smooth.
Smooth skiing.
Smooth skiing.
Dollar Shave Club delivers everything to you. That means no more trips to the store, wandering the aisles, hunting for razors, shampoo, toothpaste, butt wipes.
No need to take the time out of your day shopping so you can play at being a cashier, scanning and bagging your own stuff.
So right now, we want you to go for the gold. Join Dollar Shave Club today, and for just $5 with free shipping, you'll get the Shower Shave Starter Set.
It has the 6-blade executive razor, plus trial sizes of shave butter, body cleanser, and one wipe Charlie's. Then keep the blades coming for a few bucks a month.
Get yours at DollarShaveClub.com/court.
That's DollarShaveClub.com/court.
Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
So now some states have actually made these cameras illegal. And do you know one of these states which has done so, Tommy?
West Virginia.
That's right. West Virginia. We also have Arkansas, Maine, Michigan, Mississippi, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire.
That's good.
Yeah. So
I don't like them.
I don't either.
I can't stand them. I used to be, when I was younger, I used to get tickets a lot.
I can't believe that.
I have not gotten any in a long time. I'm knocking on wood. because I now follow the speeding rules quite safely. But here's the thing. I like to drive at a speed that feels right. I don't really care what the sign says. You know, based on the road and the traffic and the weather, I just kind of pick a speed that feels good. And whatever feels right, that's what I want to drive at. I don't want some camera flashing me every time I drive by. You know, I want to be able to just drive my speed that feels comfortable.
So you're saying is I can't drive 55?
That's right. That's right. Sammy Hagar summed that up. But, you know, you just one with your car driving along. And you know, if that speed's 80, then it's 80. If that speed's 50, then it's 50. But you should be able to just kind of cruise along like the Autobahn.
A perfect melding of man and machine.
Exactly. That's the way I feel. And I don't want some camera intruding on my tranquility.
Well, like I said, you already can see a problem with a conflict of interest in some of these companies. There's definitely the appearance of impropriety, and in some circumstances, the actual yellow lights were shortened so that people had less time and were actually more likely to run red lights. And these yellow light times are generally promulgated by state agencies. I had a case in Florida several years ago and found that the yellow light time for an intersection was actually less than what was required by the Florida Department of Transportation, FDOT. That caused an abnormal number of people to actually run this light because of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that was probably an accident.
Right. I read some other stories where that was done to increase revenue, that they shortened the yellow light time so they could show them was red lights.
And that actually makes it more dangerous.
That should be criminal.
It should be.
But you are increasing opportunity, because how many people like try to beat a yellow light?
Yeah.
And then how many people anticipate the light turning green?
Mm-hmm.
And that sets up a bad situation.
Yeah, it does.
You get conflicting moves going on.
When a body meets a body coming through their eye.
That's right. It doesn't matter who's got the right of way. There's still going to be a bad wreck.
Exactly.
You know, one of the other stories that was posted in there, had to do with a law professor that mm-hmm. got one of these camera tickets. Now, I would assume that a law professor, he's got a lot of time on his hand, a lot of theory of law and everything. He's got a lot of time to think up how he's going to approach this.
Yeah.
So this guy got one, and he says, as a matter of fact, I was not driving the car. In fact, at the time, I was in a faculty meeting at the law school where I teach. Thus, I decided to challenge this injustice on the principle of the thing.
So I wonder, he wasn't driving the car. Maybe he let somebody borrow it or something like that.
Yeah, he never says
who
was driving it or how it came to be that it was captured on there. He just says he was not driving it, and he has proof that he was not driving it.
But you know what? Here's my thing. I don't even care if the guy was driving it. He has his right to basically challenge this as much as he wants.
Sure.
So I just want to go ahead and throw that out there first.
But that was his main reason, is that he got this ticket and is like, you know, I wasn't driving the car. Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's your car.
Right.
So on the appointed day, he says he tromped over to the municipal court and sat down among the accused armed robbery suspects, drug dealers, and other misdeeds. And after a while, they finally came in and separated out the ones that were just there for traffic court, so they didn't have to sit there with the rapists and everything.
It's like criminal light.
Right. So first the magistrate ruled against him, so he tried to appeal. Well, the clerk's office made him wait in the lobby. When they finally saw him, they insisted that he provide a criminal appeal bond. He says, but I wasn't convicted of a crime, so I protested. No matter, no appeal, no bond, no appeal. So, you know, he either posted this bond or he wasn't allowed to make an appeal.
Right.
So he goes to write a check, and they said, nope, we don't take checks, only cash. So he went to an ATM and returned, and then he came back and had to wait in line again. When he came back, then he had to see a different employee, and they insisted that the amount would be twice what he had to post. So he had to go back to the ATM again and get another round of money to be able to do it. So this guy really wanted to challenge this ticket.
They're obviously jerking this guy around.
Exactly. Just trying to get him to give up and pay the fine, right?
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing, too, is, again, this was not a criminal infraction. It was basically a civil fine generated by one of these cameras.
Yet they're making him post a criminal bond that's twice what he actually owes.
Right.
Now, the next day, he called the city attorney to see if she really wanted to go through with this, and she did. He said, one does not expect municipal officials to be paragons of lawfulness, but it is a bit jarring to encounter a city attorney who evinces no interest in, much less knowledge of, her constitutional duties. I asked her whether this was a criminal action or a civil action. She replied, it's hard to explain it in those terms.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be. If you're the city attorney, it should be one or the other, you know? Yeah. I asked whether she intended to proceed under criminal procedural rules or in civil procedure. We would proceed under the rules of criminal procedure, she answered, because this is a criminal case. I asked when I could expect to be charged, indicted, or have a probable cause determination. She replied that none of those events would occur because this is a civil action. What?
Yeah.
So I could expect to be served with a complaint? No. No, as she already explained, we would proceed under criminal rule. What?
Yeah.
She keeps flip-flopping back and forth.
Well, she's cherry-picking the different arguments she wants to use.
Exactly.
Now, the thing is that if you are being criminally prosecuted for something, it's better because that really has the hammer. They're a bit more onerous as far as the criminal rules, and there's usually a threat of jail time or something along those lines.
Right.
So, whereas, you know, if it's a civil type thing, it's like, well, if I don't pay it, I don't pay it. You know, you can try to collect on it.
It's just like a lawsuit.
Yeah.
You get a civil lawsuit filed against you. You don't have the threat of going to jail. You got the threat of having to pay some money.
Right.
So she asserted that he had violated the rules of the road and exclaimed, you were caught on camera speeding. I asked her for any evidence. She replied she did not need evidence. I was deemed liable because an automobile that I own was caught speeding. But the complaint is against me, I noted, not my car. But I am liable, she insisted, because I loan my vehicle to someone who speeds. I asked where in the laws it prohibits me from loaning my vehicle, and how am I to know in advance that any particular person is going to speed using my car? Agitated by my, in quotes, semantics, she advised me to raise any due process issues with the trial court. So I think that's funny, that the way that goes back and forth. How are you supposed to know in advance a person is prone to speeding?
Yeah.
So before the trial, he moved to dismiss, but they didn't dismiss. And they went back and forth on several constitutional issues. Equally troubling is that the municipality is authorized to make the owner answer a civil suit without any standing. Standing, as we've gone over before, is a requirement for a person who wishes to enlist a state's judicial power against another person. No fellow citizen can haul you into court without first alleging that you wrongly caused some particular injury to that person. A city cannot lawfully do to you what your fellow citizen cannot do to you, and it has no standing if it has not suffered a particular injury. If a driver rolls through a yellow light at an empty intersection and fails to cross the line before the light turns red, no one is injured, least of all the city. In my case, the city attorney argued that my city has standing because someone exceeded the speed limit while driving my car and thereby breached his or her duty to obey the law. Certainly all citizens have a duty not to break criminal laws with culpable intent, but we owe that duty neither to the city nor to the state, but to each other. If we breach the duty, the city prosecutes on behalf of the people and must afford us criminal due process. This is American constitutionalism 101.
Yeah.
Well, it ended up that they finally let him out of the ticket. Part of it was because of the fines that are involved and that it was the conflict of interest and, you know.
And he's a major thorn in their side.
Yeah.
Like this, yeah. He was not going to let this go away. And, he was going to take it no matter how far it needed to go.
And I think they saw themselves some of their own shortcomings. And if they proceeded to any other trial court outside of their jurisdiction, it was not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. That was an article, I think it's by Adam McLeod, and he was a law professor.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny that he took that all the way. That reminds me, there was actually a insurance company that there was a certain way you could kind of collect, I guess, bad faith against them for this certain kind of accident. And I'm trying to talk about this without getting too specific. But anyway, they actually paid and settled with this one attorney very early and made it so he could not actually disclose this to anybody else. Because it actually opened them up for a lot more kind of exposure on this very small issue. So, and they didn't want to have this precedent out there. Mm. So for them, it made more sense to go ahead and try to, you know, nip this in the bud before anybody else caught wind of it. And that's what they did. So it was kind of a very interesting thing.
Well, that kind of reminds me of the carbolic balls one.
Mm-hmm.
About once the one person proceeded to apply for the money because it didn't work or something like that, and then that opened the floodgate for others, but then they used that as proof that it must work.
Yeah.
Remember?
They spun it around to make their own.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I was talked about the Florida Department of Transportation, the FDOT, and there's one thing I forgot to mention that it seems like maybe the FDOT might be in on this whole yellow light thing as well, because in 2011, Florida state law mandated that the length of yellow lights be based on a formula which considers either the road speed limit or a percentage of the average car speed, whichever is greater. And that's what the actual law said. But that year in 2011, they just kind of quietly removed that whichever is greater part. So basically the result was that cities could base their yellow times on arbitrary speed limits, which sometimes would have little to do with actually how fast cars are driving in the area. Now, you know, there's certain areas where even though the speed limit might be like 35 miles an hour, people go 45 or 50. And if you're going 35, I mean, people are flying past you.
Right.
So basically this, the way this law was written was it kind of took that into account, like what the average speed was in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes more sense if you think about it,
mm-hmm.
because they kind of get a better estimate as actually how fast traffic is going there.
Right.
So one place in particular I can think of is right there by Baskin-Robbins on 16th Street going out of Huntington. It's 35 all the way till you get like way past Meadows Elementary there going out of town.
Mm-hmm.
But man, people fly through there.
Well, that's the lighting. The light is also bad in that area because that's a big intersection.
Yeah.
That's a wide intersection. And I see so many people running red lights because that light's not yellow very long.
Yeah.
And it turns yellow. You can't stop. You know, you're already entering the intersection, but it's going to be red before you can get through the intersection. And you can sit at that light about any time, and you'll see somebody run that light.
I like the way it used to be back in the day before they changed that intersection.
Yeah, it used to be kind of off kilter. You had two different intersections right next to each other, and you also had a right hand lane that went off that took you completely out of the intersection.
Yeah, but I think it was more efficient.
Yeah, probably so. There was another thing. The reason I say Ohio, too, there was the state of Ohio. Actually, I won't say they tried to outlaw cameras, but they made it so restrictive. I can't imagine anybody using it. But then what's amazing to me is there were several cities within Ohio that sued the state of Ohio to keep their damn cameras.
Yeah.
They wanted to keep using them.
Well, they've invested money in them. They've got these contracts with these companies, and they're probably making money on them. So they're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Wait a second, state.
And so since they have home rule laws there that tell cities they can do certain things within their scope, they're saying, well, under home rule, we can do this. And as a state, you can't turn around and tell us what we can do within the confines of our city. So, you know, there was the city of Dayton that was suing the state of Ohio over being able to keep their traffic cameras. And one of the things that they didn't like is the state law, like I say, it didn't outlaw them, it just made it very difficult. The state law said, basically gave you a grace speed in there. It said that you couldn't cite anybody on regular speed, like in anything under interstate speeds, for going less than 6 miles over the speed limit. And for over on interstate, it had to be more than 10 miles over the speed limit. Well, the city of Dayton said, well, you're in effect raising the speed limit
right.
when you do that. So they said that's unconstitutional. You can't just arbitrarily put that in there and raise the speed limit. So that was one of their arguments that was in there. But they've had several cities that have sued the state of Ohio because they want to maintain their cameras. And the state of Ohio ends up that most of these cities have won if the suit is filed under home rule. And it all goes back to some other ruling from Canton, Ohio, that sued over manufactured housing.
Right.
And basically won the right to do whatever you want under home rule, even if it conflicts with the state. Whereas it clearly says in state constitution, if a city law and a state law come into conflict, the state law will win out.
Yeah.
But yet they've changed that under the home rule laws.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I think I like having, I mean, I do appreciate the fact that you want to have your municipality's ability to like tailor their laws to fit the little smaller population. But at the same time, I think there's a little bit more abuse of power sometimes at these smaller levels too.
Well, so yeah.
I like having the state over top of all this.
Just like the city that I was talking about where the mayor keeps getting rid of the police chief because he just wants to issue fines and not arrest criminals.
Yeah.
You know, they can tailor these things to meet personal goals instead of the public's goals. is, I guess, the way I feel about it. And anytime individuals are doing this for their own concern and not the public's concern, they're probably making a bad decision.
Yeah, they're actually in Florida, there's a bill which would outlaw them down there as well. And basically, there's a big debate, and not surprisingly, the American Traffic Solutions, the red light camera company down in Florida, has hired 26 lobbyists during the legislative session to try to lobby the lawmakers to keep their cameras. But there's been a lot of studies that show that the number of crashes blamed on red light running has increased where there's cameras. So, I mean, there's studies that say that it actually doesn't actually work. It actually does opposite of what it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's kind of weird.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I guess what they're trying to say is, we want the money from catching people doing these traffic violations, but we don't want to waste our law enforcement on doing it. So how else can we capture the funds and not have to waste resources?
Yeah. And these things, these fines, they don't go on your driver's record. You don't get points for them. They're not going to cause your insurance to go up. I mean, you could get 1,000 of them, and it doesn't even matter. It's more money.
That's right. It's just the money that's involved. And yeah. And anytime that's your ultimate ends, it sets up the appearance of malfeasance somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I found another one where an Iowa woman said that she was wrongly ticketed by an automatic traffic camera system. It said that Marla Leaf, 67, it says it's not about the money, but the constitutional rights. Now, this went all the way to the state Supreme Court, even though it was just a $75 small claims court case, which is unusual that something like that would make it to the state Supreme Court. It said that that her ticketing violated equal protection and due process clauses of the Iowa Constitution, in part because it delegates police power to GATSO USA, the private for-profit company hired to run the equipment. It said that she says, "Why should I pay a ticket, and why should others have to pay for tickets that they didn't do?" It said that there were six other drivers that actually were joined into this that went to the Supreme Court, and that this was the only municipality that actually used cameras on the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, it would be on interstate states that would be using speed cameras.
Yeah.
But this was a city using speed cameras on their little piece of the interstate.
It's their little piece of the pie right there where they make all their money.
Yeah. Such cases are closely watched by other communities with automatic traffic equipment. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety says 142 communities in the United States use automated speed camera systems, and 420 have automated red light cameras. But she says that on the day she got the ticket, that she was driving home from an eye appointment, and said that it was icy, roads. It was raining, and the roads were icy, and she was driving slowly, so slowly that other cars were passing her on both sides. Yet, and she says she drove between 50 and 55, yet she was cited for driving 68.
She's like, there's no way.
Right, right. So anyway, so it went on up through. It said that one of their arguments were they do not give tickets to semis or to government vehicles that they catch speeding.
Mm-hmm.
They give them free pass. And so that was one of their arguments, is that it's clearly arbitrary and unreasonable. But the city attorney contends that that doesn't matter. Incremental problem solving or under-inclusiveness does not make an ordinance unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Was their argument. Well, another part of this was the way that the citation is written, it looks like you only have one means to appeal, and that's to this, basically, this city administrative position that they set up. And this person that's in this position actually happened to be the son of a police officer. So the people felt like there's no use going to this guy.
Yeah.
He's gonna rule against you anyway. But it didn't point out that you actually do have the right to go to appeal directly to a magistrate or a district court. Well, they asked her, the city attorney, about this. The city attorney said, well, you do have that right. And yeah, it wasn't very clear. And since that time, we have now rewritten these fines when we send them out, that they have a little clearer information on it.
Yeah.
So they, in 2020 hindsight, they realized they had a problem there. So anyway, that one, it was still pending as of the time of this writing. The other problem that was with that, though, also was that it also says where the cameras have to be located when there's a speed reduction. and this camera did not meet that designation. It was short by about 114 feet of where it needed to be.
Oh, I'm sure they want it as close to where it goes from 65 to 35. Put it right on the line right there.
You'll catch, right.
Catch a, what is it, cast a wide net.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the funny thing is that every time you see a public opinion poll about these red light cameras, people are actually in support of them. And they seem to like these things. They think it because, well, more cameras out there will make the roads safer, you know, whatever. But also, I don't think that the people who have this opinion or they poll have ever actually had to deal with being accused of doing one of these things either, because it's kind of ridiculous if you think about it. And the thing is, I think a lot of people, they don't even really cause a stink. They just pay the fine and move on. They don't really think about it.
Well, that's the only way that you would be in favor of them, I think, is if you'd just be willing to just throw up your hands and say, oh, well, they caught me.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you did or not. Oh, right. Well, they got me, so I guess I'll do it.
There was a class action lawsuit that I read about in Chicago that recently settled for $38.75 million. And the guy who ran the program and brought it into existence was actually sentenced to 10 years in prison for taking $2 million in bribes to get these contracts to this Arizona company. I mean, that's pretty big business right there.
Yeah, I'll say.
According to the testimony of that trial, he took cash bribes of $2,000 for each of the 384 red light cameras that were installed when he oversaw the program.
Wow.
$2,000 a camera. So think about that. This company was willing to give him $2,000 a camera as a bribe just to basically get them in there because they knew that they were going to make bank off these things. And the Chicago Tribune actually sponsored a study back in 2014 and found that 40% of the intersections equipped with the cameras actually make the streets more dangerous. They said they found that the cameras caused a 22% increase in rear-end crashes, yet provided no safety benefit at the intersections. So,
oh, people probably try to slam on the brakes and stop because they know there's cameras there. So they're making decisions the other way. Instead of deciding to go ahead and run through the light, they're making decisions they better try to stop.
Yeah.
And the guy behind them is thinking he's going to go.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are actually, not only are they not like doing really their job, they're actually making the roads a bit more dangerous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have different cities that want to shorten yellow light times so they catch more people and make money. I mean, I can't stand these cameras. I think they're horrible.
Well, one of the things too is in one of these other arguments in that lawsuit against Ohio by Dayton is they were talking about you need to post where the cameras are and you need to give periods before for people to know that they're going to be there and stuff like that. Only problem with that is maybe half the people that drive through that are people that live in that area, and so that all that pre-starting publicity would do good.
Yeah.
But the other part is the traveling public that may be coming through from out of state and everywhere else, you know, they're not going to know about that. They're not going to know that there's cameras there. So you know there's one, so you're going to stop short on a yellow light. The guy behind you is driving like you would anywhere else, and he's thinking, oh, it's a yellow light. That means drive like hell so you can get through the light.
Yeah.
And he's going to run right into the back of you.
I was when I was living in Florida, they were starting to install these in the where I lived, and they actually had a period for like 120 days where the cameras were up, but they weren't actually issuing tickets from them or something like that. I think that was the deal. It was basically to get people to get used to them.
Right.
And then they started issuing tickets from them. At that time, they were actually doing criminal citations for them, and I had a few people that retained me to go challenge these tickets in basically city court over these criminal traffic violations, and a couple, we actually were able to reduce the fines a little bit and pay them. But then this whole argument about the Sixth Amendment started coming up and started asserting that as a possible defense. And man, they wilted like a flower with that. I mean, yeah. They're like, well, yeah, that's a good point. We can't really get around that.
Yeah.
So
I think that their mindset is everybody's just going to accept this and pay the fine.
Yeah.
And when you actually look at it, it is very unconstitutional the way it's set up.
Yeah. So now I think that they were suspended them in Florida for a while. Now they have them a little bit. And now they're trying to get rid of them again, I think. But we'll see. And it's kind of like that everywhere across the country. They're kind of there's an ebb and a flow to these cameras. They get them for a little bit, then the state doesn't like what they're doing with them, and then they do different things with them. And I don't know. I'm just not a fan of them.
I think it does just present it presents a conflict of interest, first of all. That people are doing things for the sake of money. They're not doing things to make it safer. They can say it's to make it safer, but that's not really what they were doing. If they were really doing something to make the streets safer, then they wouldn't get the pushback on it.
Exactly.
But that is not what this is for. This is merely for revenue collection purposes to increase the finances of that particular district. I found 10 crazy red light camera cases that I thought were interesting. January 22nd, 2013, a letter was sent to both the city of East Cleveland, Ohio, here again it's in Ohio, and the company that operates East Cleveland's photo enforcement program. Postal Service Attorney Jennifer S. Breslin said the post office should ignore 2 school zone speeding citations and 5 red light infractions that postal trucks received in December. I'm providing mail service across the country. The Postal Service attempts to work within local and state laws and regulations when feasible, wrote Breslin. However, as you are probably aware, the Postal Service enjoys federal immunity from state and local regulations, she continued. The state and/or local ordinances imposing penalties and fines cannot be enforced as against the Postal Service, and there is no statutory basis for doing so. So the Postal Service can do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
They don't have to listen to you, state. Red light cameras bankrupt the city. Like many cities around the country, San Bernardino, California tried to make money via red light cameras, but it didn't turn out so well for this town. In 2008, San Bernardino was caught cheating. To write more tickets, the city was using yellow lights that were timed too short for California law, just like we said.
Yeah.
When the city restored the proper yellow light durations, the revenue from red light violations sank so much that San Bernardino was losing money to ATS, the company it hired to operate the camera system. In 2011, the city council voted to end the contract before its 2014 term and paid ATS what it thought would be a $110,000 exit fee. But ATS claimed it was owed $1.9 million. Mm. In March 2012, the city added 3 more red light cameras to try to make enough money to pay back ATS, even though by that time a San Bernardino County court had ruled that photo tickets were inadmissible hearsay.
Oh my gosh, what a bunch of idiots.
So in August 2012, the city filed bankruptcy, allowing it to finally end its contract with ATS. A protest. A court in Suznik, Poland, on December 11th, imposed $1,000, which was $1,000 zloty, which is $315. I don't know how you say that. Zlotys? I don't know. A fine against a man who made an unusual protest against speed cameras. This guy hopped on his bicycle wearing nothing but sneakers and rode through the intersection at a speed of 33 miles an hour because it's a 25 mile an hour zone. So the camera went off and took a picture of him naked on his bicycle.
Wow.
So that was his protest, but they dragged him in and found him guilty of indecent exposure.
I got to tell you, running a red light while naked on a bicycle going 33 miles an hour sounds like a recipe for some nasty road rash.
You better hope nobody else is coming the other way too.
Yeah, no kidding. And what happens if you wreck? I mean, Hope he had a helmet.
He better had a couple of them. Facing your digital accuser. When Tacoma, Washington motorist Kevin Shamodka received a ticket accusing him of running a red light courtesy of the Australian company Redflex that installed the system, he wanted to face his accuser and challenge a ticket. Just one problem. He was told he'd have to pay $670 in travel expenses to bring in a Redflex employee from Australia. When I was at the clerk's office inquiring about chain of custody information, the employee at the counter mentioned that if I wanted to subpoena a camera company representative, there was a fee. So he ended up appealing that, and the judge singled out the Sixth Amendment right to face one's accuser and dismissed the charges.
Yep.
When driving and parking are the same thing, like a lot of states, Missouri puts points on a person's driver's license if that person is convicted of a moving violation. But this rule created a problem for Kansas City, which wanted to rake in the bucks by handing out red light camera tickets. It would have to prove who was driving the car, which is a lot harder than photographing a license plate and finding the owner. So the city turned to some clever legal chicanery. According to a recent change in the city code, running a red light in Kansas City is now treated as if the owner of the vehicle parked illegally in the middle of an intersection. The violation is not driving into the intersection, but owning a vehicle that is found in the intersection while the light is emitting a steady red light. A city memo said the fact that this is a parking violation, not a moving violation, means that Kansas City doesn't have to bother with figuring out who is driving. So how about that?
That's a little shady.
I would say so. I would think that alone should get it kicked out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Speed camera tickets, stationary car. A speed camera in Baltimore cited Daniel Doty with a $40 fine for driving 38 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour zone. Though two photos issued with the citation showed Doty's car was stopped and the brake lights were on, and a video clip showed the car was stationary, according to the Baltimore Sun. The city has 83 speed cameras and 81 red light cameras and offered the Sun no explanation on how the errors occurred. Edmonton cancels 141,729 photo tickets.
Good Lord.
The province of Alberta, Canada refunded more than $12 million for 141,729 photo tickets issued in 2009 and 2010 from 47 red light camera intersections in Edmonton because it was unable to verify the accuracy of the camera's readings. Officials at Edmonton Police Station said there were at least 26 false readings from the automated ticketing machines, a fault discovered when one ticket showed all cars on a particular road in town were traveling at 89 miles per hour. they had another one where the way that they threatened drivers to pay it is they were going to cut off all your city services, gas, water, sewer, and everything else.
Yeah.
If you didn't pay your fine, and then you'd have to pay to have everything reconnected. So they would kind of like hold you ransom.
Kind of like a parking ticket.
Right. And then, they said in Prescott Valley, Arizona, they received a complaint that police officers in charge of reviewing and issuing tickets from photo ticketing machines had been dismissing tickets issued to other officers' family members. So they went through, and sure enough, they said, yes, they had been doing that. So they made them kick out all the other tickets that were involved because they said they couldn't show favoritism like that. And then while one city ditched their ticket, the city of Hayward, California, recently decided to abandon automated red light ticketing. In part, the tickets weren't effective. Over 4 years, the ticket vendor for Hayward sent out 14,536 tickets worth more than $7 million. But most of the tickets went to motorists who were making right-hand turns on red. And judges threw out most of these tickets. But more important, rear-end accidents increased significantly because people came to a screeching halt. Hayward Police Chief Diane Urban said to the newspaper.com, there's no proven correlation between red light camera systems and consistently decreasing crashes. Rear-end collisions increased in most intersections with red light cameras, although alternatives to cameras such as increasing the duration of yellow lights on some intersections have reduced both crashes as well as the number of automated tickets.
You know, if I was going to be, if I was trying to file a lawsuit based on an auto accident, I think I might look, if it was one of these intersections that had a red light camera and my client was rear-ended, I might look to file a lawsuit against the city for having that camera there.
Yeah.
I think there's, you know, a good argument to be made for it.
Well, and I understand what they're saying about these right on reds. Most people, if you roll up in a right-hand turn lane and there's no traffic coming, very few people seem to stop.
Yeah.
I see some that don't even seem to slow down.
Yeah.
They just kind of keep going.
I do a quick stop.
A quick stop means a rolling stop.
No. I actually stop, but it's very quickly.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So quick you can't even see it. You're like the Flash.
That reminds me of a joke. There's a guy, he's driving along, comes up to a red light, making a right-hand turn, puts a signal on, comes to the intersection, doesn't come to a complete stop, slows down a little bit, sees no traffic's coming, makes the right-hand turn, goes through. All of a sudden, police lights come on behind him, pulls him over. Officer asks him, hey, I need you to step out of the car, please. Guy steps out of the car. He says, oh, you know why I pulled you over? He's like, I don't know. He goes, well, you didn't stop at that red light there when you're making that right-hand turn. You're supposed to stop before you turn to make sure there's no traffic coming. He's like, well, officer, I slowed down. He's like, oh, you slowed down, huh? Officer pulls out his billy club, starts beating the guy. And the guy's like, stop, stop, stop. He goes, give me a stop or just slow down?
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to break it down into terms you can understand, huh?
Yeah. That was actually not a real story. That was a joke.
That was a joke.
Yeah.
You're not advocating police violence in any form?
I'm not. Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms. And I usually ask Tommy if he can kind of extrapolate the meaning from them based on what we talked about.
I can extrapolate them.
Now, we didn't have a lot of different legal terms here, but there was a couple of key ones that I think we can talk about. Why is it that you can't have a criminal infraction from a camera.
Because you have to be able to confront your accuser, and you can't confront your accuser.
That's right. Do you know where the Confrontation Clause comes from?
The Sixth Amendment.
The Sixth Amendment to what?
The Constitution.
The Constitution of where?
The United States of America.
There you go.
For which we stand.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen.
Amen.
Play ball. Play ball.
So, yes, it's the Sixth Amendment Confrontation Clause. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to be confronted with the witnesses against him. And this is one of the things, too. On Friday, I had a client who entered a guilty plea. And whenever you enter a guilty plea, you have to go over, especially to a felony, you have to enter, you have to go through this paperwork with the client ahead of time. They're called plea forms. And one of the main things you talk about is you have to make sure they understand that they have the right to confront their accuser. And if they wanted to, then we'd be able to cross-examine that accuser. So you'd have the right to a trial. So you're not being forced to take a plea. You have the right to do that. So the Sixth Amendment Confrontation Clause is one of the most important things we have in criminal law, because it's really the basis for it, if you think about it, because you have to have the ability to come in front of a trier of fact, a judge or a jury, and let them base the evidence based on what this person's saying.
Right.
So it's a very important thing. And cameras, they just don't cut it.
Mm-mm. One of the pleas I don't like is a Kennedy plea.
Oh.
Those are a cop-out.
Well.
The guy's guilty and should be found guilty. Not that there's a preponderance of evidence against him and he admits they could find him guilty. So go ahead and sentence me, but I'm not going to say I'm guilty.
There are instances, I understand where you're coming from, but there are instances where a Kennedy plea, where basically you're not admitting guilt. You're basically just saying, hey, I got essentially called a no contest plea as well.
Yeah.
Where you're saying, I just, you know what? The charges are so great against me. I really don't have any kind of defense or anything I can really say to get out of this. So.
Well, it could be, but it seems like 9 out of 10 cases around here end on Kennedy pleas.
I'll respectfully disagree with you on that.
All right, counselor.
I see a lot of.
I just read the paper. You're actually in there amongst them.
I see a lot of guilty pleas, and they're pretty rare. I would say it's probably 1 out of every 30 or 40 I see, maybe.
Like they must just write about them more in the paper.
Well, the ones you see for the Kennedy pleas are usually the really more egregious crimes that take place, and that's one way that you can kind of sell that to somebody as far as taking a plea. It's like, look, you're not going to have to admit guilt. You're still going to go to prison, but look, you're not going to have to admit guilt. So, I mean, it's, you know, whatever. Justice is still served. It's better to do that than drag out a trial and maybe have the victims have to come and confront people on different things like that.
Well, if they could beat him into a guilty plea, it would be better, though.
Yeah, that'd be way better.
Yeah. It's
not
violent. If I had a rubber hose.
Not violent. Phone book. That's the right way to do it. Now, one thing you mentioned was standing.
Right.
What is standing?
It's like the opposite of sitting.
we'll take that.
Standing means you have to have suffered some type of legal injury. And to bring a civil suit, you have to have suffered some type of actual injury, whether it's physical or financial or whatever.
That's true. In this case, that law professor was talking about is basically that if you're trying to have some sort of civil infraction against a driver, the city actually didn't suffer any damages from it. So how can you actually sue him in civil court?
I like the way he summed that up, too. He said that we can hurt each other, but you can't really hurt the city or the state. Because when the city or the state brings, even when they bring criminal charges against you or whatever, it's, you know, for the people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we owe the duty not to the state or the city, we owe the duty to each other. I think that's an interesting way of looking at it.
Duty.
Duty. I owe you my duty.
It is interesting. I know it's very immature, but I can't help it. I say duty so much, and it's just...
I've become numb to it by now. It got old. I guess it was the shoe was on the other foot, duty. All right, here's one for you, Mike.
Uh-oh. I always get nervous whenever you ask me one.
What state do you want to stay out of because they most likely have some type of speed trap or activity to extract money from you for the purposes of enrichment of their municipality?
I think it starts with an O. ends with an O.
And it's high in the middle.
That's right. Ohio.
Ohio.
O-H-I-O.
We're here to check your wallet. So travelers, beware.
Yeah, Ohio, is especially right across the river, is notorious for having having speed traps.
Speed traps and being real tight asses about the whole thing. I mean, if the speed limit's 55, by God, you better go 55. There's no 56 or 57. There's no tolerance in there. You know, a lot of times people figure you're okay up to 5 miles over the speed limit. They won't bother you. Uh-uh, not in Ohio. They'll write you a ticket for 56, and they'll be damn proud of it. So when you're traveling through there, watch your P's and Q's.
That's right.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...